Welcome to a bonus episode of the Dan Cave, episode 101. We pick up where we left off yesterday. Eric Briggs wasn't able to join us yesterday, but I got him today on his brand new phone. And he'll be checking in from Phoenix as we talk about the Seahawks and the Cardinals getting together in the desert on Sunday. Eric Briggs, our Arizona correspondent, joins me next in the Dan Cave.
Welcome to the Dan Cave. Here's your host, Dan Vies.
All right, so I was able to get Eric on the phone this morning. We talked about a couple of things, including Seahawks' reported interest in Antonio Brown. That was something we talked about off-air before we started recording. Basically, we're essentially in agreement. This news kind of broke yesterday while I was on the air that now that Antonio Brown's 8-game suspension by the league is nearing an end, we knew the Seahawks had some interest. There are other teams involved as well now that it's becoming close to a reality. And essentially, Eric and I are on the same page on this one. I've kind of turned the corner on Antonio Brown. I was dead set 100% against it when the news first broke over the offseason and even before that, because there was some talk last season. But I feel good enough about the locker room in Seattle now and about Russ's leadership, and you know that Pete Carroll has had this conversation with Antonio Brown that, look, we're not going to put up with anything here. And if you go outside the lines, you're gone. So I know there's still some people out there that are very against this move and are kind of freaking out about the possibility of it becoming a reality. I would say just relax. I don't know how much harm it could do, really. And the guy's kept his nose clean for the last 6 months. But if he comes in here and starts doing crazy stuff on his social media, me type stuff, look where I'm at, I'm going to take the Seahawks to the Super Bowl, and he starts running his mouth and saying stupid stuff, he'll be gone. So we talked about that off the air, and then we got into this Sunday's game in Arizona. So I'm going to get to that conversation now. This is Eric Briggs and I talking some football. Eric Briggs joining us from Arizona. He is our Arizona correspondent, and of course the Seahawks play the Cardinals this week. Seahawks come in undefeated off the bye week. The Cardinals 4-2 after two blowout wins. And I want to know what your perspective is as someone who lives in the Phoenix area and listens to Phoenix talk radio and listens to the opposing just the sports community down there. What is the general sense about the Cardinals? Because up here, there's a lot of talk of, man, they're scary. Man, they're red hot. Man, I'm worried about them. And I'm not exactly buying into that. I'll tell you why in a second. But I want to know how people are feeling down there, especially Cardinal faithful.
You know, when you start talking to the Cardinal fans down here, when you listen to the Cardinal Sports Talk Radio guys, you know, and they follow the same basic formula. You always have the one host. He's the you know, optimist, you know, our team's going to the Super Bowl every year guy. And then you always have the counter host. It's kind of like, well, you know, and he points out the things that he sees as potential roadblocks to the team and their success. And then typically they bring in their big guest, and the big guest is usually a guy that's, you know, kind of more of an all NFL guy that kind of picks apart their team. But I'd say the general feeling is, you know, Kyler Murray's special, and I don't necessarily deny that. However, you know, as Brock Heward pointed out, he was actually a guest on the show down here with the ESPN guys.
Okay.
He's had some major mechanical issues. That's why he's not as accurate as he was. He's got a very long windup. He's changed his arm angle quite a bit. And so that's why you see him sailing some of these balls and throwing some interceptions. His feet, I mean, his legs. I mean, maybe Lamar Jackson is the only guy in the NFL better at the quarterback position when they break the pocket and run.
Sure. Yeah.
So that is a real concern. But, you know, they feel good about their team. They feel good about the offense. You know, the defense is real shaky, especially now you got Chandler Jones out for the season. But they have some real optimism around them. But then you start listening to the other guys, and they kind of start to pick it apart. And it's like, well, this could be a shootout. Okay, so if it's a shootout, which quarterback do you trust more? Well, I'm going to go with the 8-year veteran that's done this for 8 straight years, not our second-year guy that 1 week looks like the Hall of Famer and the next week looks like, you know, Elvis Gerbach, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I've warmed up to Kyler Murray. I was against the whole experimental idea of bringing in Kingsbury and the air raid concepts and jettisoning and, you know, kicking Josh Rosen to the curb after 1 year and using the first overall pick on Murray. But I've come around because he's a talented dude. There's no question about that. Like, the talent is real.
I
have some questions about his drive, his motivation. Sometimes maybe it's just his body language. Sometimes he comes across as a guy who just, you know, is going through the motions a little bit. Maybe that's just the way he carries himself, but it's, I want people to pump the brakes a little bit on the Cardinals, because when you look at who they played the last 2 weeks, we're talking about the New York Jets, the worst team in football, and they had Joe Flacco playing quarterback at the time. It wasn't even Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Dallas Cowboys, who are an absolute mess. We know from all the reporting happening this week behind the scenes and on the field, and they were playing without Dak Prescott, who at least might have given him a chance. Two terrible offenses who turned the ball over against him and did everything wrong. And they did what they're supposed to do, the Cardinals did, and took advantage of that. I do think, without Chandler Jones, that defense is a lot more vulnerable than it's looked the last 2 weeks because of who they were playing against. And I think there are some things that the Seahawks can exploit. But that's never been a place that the Seahawks are comfortable playing. And, in fact, it's been a house of horrors down there the last couple of years with injuries and weird things happening. It always seems to be a close game. You and I were at the 6-3 overtime, or the 3-3 overtime tie.
Yeah.
4 years ago. That was one of the weirdest games I've ever seen. What's your general feeling about this matchup and about the Seahawks' chances?
Well, I will point this out. The last time Russell Wilson lost at University of Phoenix Stadium in a non-Super Bowl was his rookie year.
Rookie year, and he almost pulled it off.
So he's got 6 wins and 1 tie in the 7 years since then. I have to say right now, as much as I do not like where our defense is at, the one thing that we have to always give credit to until they prove us wrong is our defenses have always gotten better as the year goes on. That's the one thing Carroll's teams have shown us. Do I expect us to turn into a top 5 or 10 defense? No. But we'll be a top 15 defense, in my belief, by the end of the season. So I think our defense gets a little bit better. And I think that where they're at with their defense, specifically lining up against an offense like ours, I think Russell Wilson's going to pick these guys apart. I really do. You know, their cornerbacks are not good. Patrick Peterson is a name only at this point. I watch this guy get beat every week. And only because they played against some very bad quarterbacks who don't see these wide open receivers. You know, it reminds me of Richard Sherman's last year in Seattle and then his year last year in San Francisco. I don't know if it's just an overconfidence in their own abilities, but they start letting guys slip behind them to get 2-3 yards past them. Well, guess what? A guy like DK Metcalf, a guy like David Moore, a guy like Tyler Lockett, you give him 2-3 yards, it's done. Patrick Peterson doesn't have the foot speed anymore to close that gap, especially with a guy as accurate as Russell Wilson is at throwing the deep ball, which I'm not sure outside of a guy like Aaron Rodgers over the last 5 years that there's been someone more accurate at the quarterback position throwing a deep ball. I think Chris Carson's going to have a hell of a game. They do not have a very good run defense. You know, their linebackers I would call athletic. I would not call physical.
Yeah.
And the one thing that our offensive line has shown as a vast improvement this year is how physical they are in the run game and getting to the second level. And then Chris Carson, and if Carlos Hyde's ready to go, both of those are very physical runners. They're not afraid of contact. You know, they're not the Jerick McKinnons. They're not the, you know, Rashard Penny's type of running back. These guys do not mind contact. As a matter of fact, I think in some ways they like to initiate contact on some of these linebackers and DBs. So that goes to their offense. And a lot of it's going to have to do with the accuracy of Kyler Murray. You know, if he's accurate, could he create some problems for us? Sure. If Quentin Dunbar can't go and we got Trey Flowers, yeah, that's going to be a problem if Trey Flowers is matching up with Christian Kirk all day, because Christian Kirk's a legit deep ball receiver that you cannot play off like Trey Flowers likes to do. Jamal Adams, game changer. However, I will say I'm impressed with Neal. I did not see that coming, to have a safety that start off on a practice squad step up and play some really good defense.
Yeah.
You know, he's not as dynamic as Jamal Adams. I'm not comparing him to Jamal Adams, but he's done very well for us. So, you know, I think it comes down to Kyler Murray. I'm not worried about him breaking the pocket and running. You know, we have very athletic safeties. We have very athletic linebackers that can kind of minimize some of that. I'm not saying the guy can't break some runs, but it's not going to be, you know, watching him run for 150 yards and three scores on us type of day.
Yeah.
So I like it. I like the Seahawks route. I think we're a better matched up for them. Obviously, I trust the quarterback more. Obviously, I think our offense is way more consistent and way more potent. And our defense, I expect to see, starting this week, incremental improvements, because that's a hallmark of a Seahawks defense.
I'm fascinated by this matchup, and I think coming out of a bye and the way they played in the first 5 weeks, this seems like a Seahawks team on a mission and a Seahawks team that feels very, very good about themselves. And I have a hunch that within that locker room, they kind of see the Cardinals as, you know, the new kid on the block and the young kid that maybe they have to teach a lesson to. It's certainly a key game with four of the next five against divisional opponents and the Bills mixed in there. And then things get quite a bit easier for a stretch after that. So it's the type of game that I can't wait to get to, because I think it's going to tell us a lot about the Seahawks team. Coming off a bye, with the Cardinals coming off a short week, getting some guys back off of injury, playing as well as they've played, the Seahawks should be feeling as good about themselves as they have in years. I want to see it translate to the field. There have been times over the last couple of years where we've expected them to come out and play well and beat a team they should beat, and they've struggled. I think if this team comes out Sunday and does what they're supposed to do and handles the Cardinals convincingly, it could really tell us a lot about this team, and then I think you're talking about a legit Super Bowl team.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, these next five games are definitely going to be what I would consider the most important part of our schedule, of letting us know what Seahawks team we're looking at. I have a firm belief we're going to go 4-1. I really do. I think that the biggest game we have to win, only because I think it's the most of a trap game as you could possibly get in the NFL, is this game with the Cardinals. It is this game with the Cardinals. I think we know who the Niners are. I think we know how banged up they are. We know who the Rams are. I am not terribly concerned with the Rams the way that most people are trying to paint them.
You and me both.
You know, you can remember their four wins are all the NFC East. Yeah. I mean, their wins are not that impressive. So I think that this is our trap game. If we go out there, we handle the business the way we're supposed to, like you said, it's going to set us up great for the next four games after that. And if we go 3-1 in those four games and we're sitting at 9-1 come week 11, I mean, this is a 13-14 win team. That's what it is.
Yeah, because then you hit that stretch with Philly, Washington, New York.
Exactly.
This is another thing that intrigues me. And the Seahawks seem to do really well in these situations. I've heard a lot this week about how, well, God, the Cardinals came up here at the end of last year and they kind of threw a wrench in our playoff seeding plans, and they really handled us, and the Seahawks couldn't counter anything that they did. I think, first of all, in that game, I think the Seahawks did everything wrong. I mean, they just laid an absolute dud.
Yeah.
But knowing the Seahawks team, they respond well to those rematches when those things happen. And they haven't forgotten that game, and they haven't forgotten how the Cardinals took it to them at home and made things difficult for them as far as seeding goes. And I think their approach this week, I guarantee you that's on those players' minds, is, okay, let's go show them how things really are when we're playing our best.
Absolutely. And I think that also, you know, something that's happening in our locker room right now compared to a lot of other teams, we're getting healthy. You know, you're seeing some of these other teams, they're now hitting the injuries. They're now losing guys for 3, 4, 5 games or the season. You know, Mostert, it sounds like he's out for the season for the Niners now, which just compounds to their defensive line issues where they've lost.
That's a big loss for them.
But the Seahawks are now getting healthy. You know, Damian Lewis had a couple weeks off now to get that ankle back in shape. You know, Green's sound like he could be back or he's close to being back. Jamal Adams is close to being back. Dunbar, you know, sounds like Hill might be done for the year because not good news him getting put on injured reserve this week.
Yeah.
With a back issue that's already kept him out 4 games. So that's probably the season for him. But no big deal because Neal's stepped up. I mean, I don't know if there's anyone out there that could tell me the difference in level of play you would have had with Delano Hill compared to Neal
right. In
its safety. I mean, so good news for us there. Obviously, we know Urban's out for the year. We know Blair's out for the year. But you've got these other guys. And Darryl Taylor sounds like maybe we lose him for his rookie season.
I think it's a redshirt year for the rook, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is for him. But you're talking about Dorsett coming back. I mean, you're talking about a lot of guys.
And snacks.
That we had beat up or sitting that are now getting healthy. And we didn't come out of that last game with this huge injury report that was, you know, what I would consider a real injury report. You know, we know that they throw everyone on there anyway, but, right. You know, it really shows what's happening. So I feel good about where they're at. I mean, you know, Dwayne Brown back, you know, he had a couple of weeks getting rested up. And you start having these key players coming back, maybe not all week 7, but over week 7, 8, 9, I think you're going to get about 5 or 6 guys back. And that really adds a boost to your team and their confidence level, especially if they keep getting W's without those guys being there.
Yeah.
You know, that last victory we had, you know, as much as the Vikings blew the game and as much as we took the game, was a huge confidence boost going, look, guys, we're still 5-0. And look at all these guys coming back, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Because there's no doubt in our minds right now, for this defense to get much better, we need Dunbar and we need Adams. Because our front four is not going to get to the quarterback as much as we want. We're not going to get the pressures, the hurries, the hits, the sacks.
Yeah.
But if now you've got those guys in the defensive backfield and now they got the better coverage and it's not so easy for these quarterbacks to pick us apart, gives you a little more time to get to the quarterback, and hopefully we start to see some more pressures, hurries, hits, and sacks because of that.
Well, and I'm really intrigued to see what that defensive line looks like with Damon Harrison added in there, a guy that can really eat up blocks at a time when Jaron Reed seems to have found a groove, starting to penetrate again, really starting to become difficult to block, could free things up for him and make things easier on those outside guys too. Carroll's been coy, but you have to think with 2 weeks now to prepare that Snacks is going to make his debut.
Yeah, I think that maybe if you could get him in there for 15, 20, maybe 25 snaps this weekend, that would be great. I agree with you. I think keeping Ford and Reed well-rested, because now they've got Monet and Snacks to come in and play some defensive tackle snaps, keep them a little more fresher, not only for the game, but for the rest of the season. I think that's going to be huge. I actually wonder at this point, you know, depending on Ugo Amadi's health, which it sounds like he's getting banged up again. So I don't know if that's going to keep him out this week or not. You know, they didn't have him on the report, but they kept talking about, you know, him getting banged up.
Yeah.
I mean, do you go with a package where Jamal Adams is your nickel because Neal can take his spot at the safety? And now you could, and, you know, especially with our linebackers and the health situation there and with Cody Barton not looking as good as he should look, you know, can you use Jamal Adams as the dime? Because, you know, he can cover whatever tight ends they got, especially coming up with these games with Higbee and George Kittle. And now you've got Neal that can slide into that safety spot. And then that gets Jamal Adams a little closer to the line of scrimmage without it being an obvious blitz situation. And maybe he can start blitzing some more, help out that pass rush, you know?
Yeah, and we still don't know if we're going to see Jamal. Didn't practice yesterday. Carroll's calling him day-to-day. To me, it's a real shame that Jordan Brooks, a first-round draft pick out of Texas Tech, isn't healthy for this game, because I believe that one of the reasons that they drafted him and drafted him where they did and that his skill set offers is someone that can spy a guy like Kyler Murray. And
yeah.
And I have to believe that they were getting him ready for that role. I mentioned on the show yesterday, I'd like to see him use Shaquem this weekend in that role, because he's probably the only other guy on the field that can compete with Murray in a 40-yard dash with legit 4-3 sideline-to-sideline speed. I don't know if they're going to do that. They still seem to be hesitant to use Shaquem early in games. They like to use him as a kind of a change-of-pace guy later. Maybe they have something up their sleeve, but man, I'd love to see them give him a shot to run Murray down.
Oh, I would love to see that. I think Shaquem, like you said, outside of Jordan Brooks, Shaquem would be the next obvious candidate for that spy role to kind of just keep an eye on Murray and hopefully keep him in the pocket and not let him start breaking off chunks of yards with his legs. And it is a shame. Jordan Brooks, I mean, obviously, when you have your first two picks, Brooks and Taylor, suffer the injuries they did. We already knew about Taylor's, you know, that was a surgery before the draft.
Yeah.
So that was cleaning up some stuff in college. You know, we knew about that. But, yeah, then Brooks coming down hurt, you know, that hurts a little bit as well. So, you know, I think that this is a game where you don't necessarily have to pressure Murray in that traditional sense. I think the pressure needs to come from if your DNs can stay real disciplined and keep that pocket, you know, bending in on him, and then your D tackles can really push the center of that line back. And that's a weakness for the Cardinals. Their center and their two guards are not great players. So there's a lot of matchup problems I think they're going to have with Reed and Puna Ford and Snacks if he plays. If you can do that and then still have your spy there just in case he does miraculously break the pocket, you know, that's where you can force Murray into these bad throws, because he'll take 2-3 steps out of the pocket, all of a sudden thinks he has a chance to throw somewhere, and then he's been throwing some picks, or he throws the ball high.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a key factor. Do our DNs stay disciplined to not let him break outside?
What's the talk down there as far as the Cardinals' backfield? Because it seems like with each passing week now, Chase Edmonds is getting more and more involved in the offense, and you wonder if they're grooming him to perhaps take over that lead back role, since Kenyon Drake really hasn't been that effective since that great run he went on after the trade last year at the deadline. Is Chase Edmonds becoming more of the guy there?
I don't think so. I think Edmonds truly is their third down back. One of the most annoying things about this Cliff Kingsbury guy and having to listen to his radio show, he always is that, I have to do better. That's my fault. I'm going to scheme better for DeAndre. I'll scheme better for Fitzgerald. I'll scheme better for Kenyon Drake. It's like, dude, you need to call it the way you got to call it at this point. Larry Fitzgerald is not Larry Fitzgerald from 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying he's a terrible wide receiver, but he's not a premier wide receiver anymore.
Oh, he'll,
there's no reason.
He'll make a couple of plays against the Seahawks Sunday. I guarantee it. He always does.
Well, yeah, that kind of always happens with us and Fitz. But the thing with Drake is they're not even recognizing right now. He came in, and it was kind of like what happened with Garoppolo before he got his big contract in San Fran. He got those last 4 or 5 starts, played pretty hot in those 4 or 5 games, and next you know, he's getting $20-something million a year for 5 years. Well, they did the same thing with Kenyon Drake. You know, David Johnson has shown that he's not done. You know, he went to Houston. He's having a decent year with Houston, especially for how bad that team is. Drake had a little hot streak there the last 4 or 5 games at the end of last season.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden, they wanted to act like he was Chris Carson or Saquon Barkley or Ezekiel Elliott. And he's not. He's not that talented of a back. Does he have the ability to break runs? Yes. But you could literally say that about 99% of the running backs in the NFL. You know, there's a reason why they're in the NFL. They can take it to the house on any given play. But he's not a top 10 back. And so, especially with how good our run defense has been, I'm not expecting a big game out of Kenyon Drake. Where I think a running back, and you brought him up, is Chase Edmonds could have a big game, is catching some of those balls out of the backfield, because we've not been great about that unless K.J. Wright specifically blows up the play. You know, yeah. K.J.'s been brilliant blowing up screens this year and taking backs out of the backfield.
Yeah, ever since I talked crap about K.J., he's been great.
Yeah, and then but when the backs went out the other side, it's Cody Barton or it's our nickelback or someone else is supposed to pick him up. That's where teams have seen some success with their running backs catching the ball.
Yeah.
So you know, I'm not worried about this game, because literally you can't tell me either defense is better than the other one. Like they both have some major issues, but you cannot tell me, especially consistently, that their offense has looked as potent as our offense has looked. You just can't say it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot of stops and starts there with that Cardinal offense. So even in the Dallas game, and fun fact, in my main fantasy league, I was facing Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins in our matchup. 1 week after I traded Kyler Murray to the guy I was playing. And I thought things were rolling. I had like an 80-point lead going into the night, and then he also had CEH. But so Murray gets tackled at the 1 yard line in the first half, and the offense really couldn't get going in that first half. There were a lot of stops and starts, and then they hit the big one to Christian Kirk to start the second half, and then they hit the big one to Hopkins to kind of get him down in the red zone and finish it out. If Hopkins hadn't been run down from behind, thank goodness he doesn't have breakaway speed. But that him getting tackled at the 4 or whatever it was there sealed my fantasy win. So I was thankful for that. But then here's the fun fact. Then that guy turned around and traded Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins to another team in our league. And I'm facing that guy this week. So I get to face that Cardinal duo back-to-back weeks in fantasy while also watching the Seahawks play him live. So I'm gonna have my fill of the Cardinals here by the end of the week.
Yeah, you'll be done talking about the Cardinals come about 4:30 Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. Listen, I'm glad I gave you a chance to break in your new phone. And
Thank you.
You know, get a good case is what I would always recommend. And we'll get you back on here soon because we're going to have some Cougar football to talk about in a couple of weeks.
And we might have to start talking about Malik McDowell here in a couple of weeks.
Oh, why is that?
You didn't see the Dolphins brought in Malik McDowell for a workout.
No.
Yeah.
Well, somebody.
And he came out with a very strong statement that said the Seahawks had their own reason for not letting me ever play, and it had nothing to do with my head injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He only said that because of the head. Don't even get me started. Someone pointed out today, someone had to remind me today on Twitter that one pick, do you know who was chosen one pick behind Malik McDowell after the Seahawks?
Buda
Baker, who now looks like the next Jamal Adams, the way he's playing down there in Arizona. Byron Murphy looks pretty good, too.
If people actually took the time to go back to the 2017 draft, I'll keep it brief, but we were originally at 26. We drafted McDowell at 35.
Right.
Just to rattle off a couple of players we could have gone with between 26 and 35. Brian Ramczyk, all-pro tackle now, right tackle for the Saints.
Right.
T.J. Watt, could have picked him up. Obviously, we could have taken Buda Baker. There was also Tack McKinley, which, you know, you go back and forth. But the guy I point out would be the Bills cornerback, Tre'Davious White. 16 interceptions over the last 4 years and counting.
Yeah. To me, T.J., looking at our needs, T.J. Watt's the guy that really stands out. And
I think you could make the equal argument if you're talking about the last 4 years combined, you could make an argument for three players there: T.J. Watt, Tre'Davious White, and Ryan Ramczyk.
Yeah.
Any one of those three from the 2017 draft we would have taken, and I think obviously that affects every draft and free agent signing after that. But man, all three are all pros, all three are all Pro Bowl guys, and all three play a position that, quite frankly, the Seahawks have struggled in. You know, T.J. Watt would have been a great linebacker that could have rushed the passer for us. Obviously, having Tre'Davious White as a lockdown corner would have been amazing for us, because then you still could have drafted Shaquille Griffin where we drafted him.
Yeah.
Imagine if you would have taken your two starting cornerbacks in the same draft. Amazing. And then, of course, you know, you talk about Ryan Ramczyk and you get a all-pro right tackle, and how long did we struggle through with Fetty? And Shell's been, in all fairness, Shell's been fairly good for us, so I'm not upset.
Yeah, I've been
but
happy
he's not
with
Ryan
Shell.
Ramczyk.
Right.
But he's not Ryan Ramczyk.
We'll have to have a much deeper, much longer conversation another time, probably in the offseason as we get ready for the draft next year about draft mistakes under Snyder, as good as he's been in some areas. But I think the Malik McDowell situation points out his biggest weakness, and I believe that is that he and his staff absolutely fall in love with certain players in the draft, talk themselves into certain players, and almost to an obsessive degree. And then they're so focused on getting guys that they have on their very short list of players that they think would help them that they don't let the draft come to them, and they force things. And those things aren't as magnified later in the draft because, you know, evaluations and ratings are more all over the board. They're more amplified early in the draft, but you can find examples later in the draft too where they missed surefire things. That would be a fun exercise to have sometime, is go through you know, the last four drafts, let's say. And you could do it in every round with every pick and look at missed opportunities and players that really could have helped him out. But thanks for thanks for helping us to end on such a downer today. I appreciate it.
I wouldn't even bring up the running. We'll save it because the running backs we could have taken in that draft.
Yeah.
You know, that we actually got Carson in the seventh round that year with Moore. Right. So both our seventh round picks, great. But the list of running backs that you would be like, oh my God. It will amaze you until you actually look at it. I just saw it today, and I was like, wow, how did we miss those?
Well, you already broke my heart with T.J. Watt, so.
Okay, I'll save the heartbreak for another
I don't know
day.
If they can get it. Here's one last question, though, because we're coming up a couple weeks away from the trade deadline, and I've seen some speculation out there. Obviously, the Seahawks don't have as much ammo this year. They don't have a first, a third, or a seventh because they traded up to get Stephen Sullivan this year so they could convert him to defensive end. That was brilliant.
I love, by the way. Absolutely love that.
Well, we'll see. They don't have a lot to work with, but do you see them doing anything this year at the deadline?
I really don't. And here's the problem. If you're making a trade for the Seahawks at this point to try to put you over the top, you need defensive line help. Well, no one's giving up the defensive line help except for a team like the Vikings, because they just did Ngakoue today.
No.
But again, did we have that firepower? Like you said, we didn't have a third. Mm-mm. So I think they gave up a third and a fifth, the Ravens did, to get Ngakoue. So would we even be in that conversation? We probably would not have been.
Yeah.
Or we would have had to overpay with our second-round pick, which really would have killed us coming up in the draft. You'll hear names like Ryan Kerrigan, I'm sure. But again, the guy's a role player at this point. Are you really giving up a bunch of money for a 32-year-old defensive end who's really not playing at this point?
Yeah.
So I just don't see it unless there's something that just changes and you truly can go get a difference maker. But then you're probably talking about giving up 2022 draft capital to get a real difference maker because you don't have the 2021 draft capital to get you all the way there. So I don't see it. I think they kind of are like, hey, look, let's get Green back. You know, let's get, Robinson some more reps. You know, let Collier keep going. Hopefully, Snacks Harrison helps free up some of the different pass rushing outside guys or even some of the blitzers. You know, he eats up some blocks and lets K.J. Wright or Wagner Adams get home to the quarterback. I think that's kind of what they resign themselves to. I don't like that we're in that spot, but it is. I think a lot of this has to do with Adams and Dunbar getting on the field again. Because we've now seen Trey Flowers. There's no way Trey Flowers is even on this roster next year.
No, I agree.
The guy cannot cover anybody. So can that help us out if Dunbar steps up and plays at his level? Adams comes back, plays at his level. Do you still find a way to get Amadi and Neal on the field? I think they do. More so Amadi than Neal because Amadi's obviously a better cover man.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we're going to go with. It's going to be this bend, don't break defense. And then when we absolutely have to make the big play to save the game or give ourselves a last crack at taking the lead in the fourth quarter, I think that's what they've kind of resigned themselves to as a defense. And hopefully, you know, you can get a guy like Dan Quinn. If he doesn't get a head coaching job next year, maybe he wants to come back and be the D coordinator. Or even better, can he come back as consultant the rest of this season? I don't know if that's in the cards or not, but maybe that could help. But I don't see it. I mean, who's out there?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Kerrigan was a guy that you named that I thought would have made some sense, but, you know, you'd probably, I don't know, you'd he's not worth a second now. A third might have been. I don't want to give up any more capital from next year's draft.
My argument would be this.
Yeah.
If you're going Kerrigan, then why don't you just sign Clay Matthews and give up no draft capital?
Yeah.
Same guy. Bring in Clay Matthews, give him 15 to 20 snaps that are obvious passing downs, you know, reps every game, and see if he can't get home to the quarterback. I mean, he's just as good as Kerrigan in that regard, and he costs no draft cap.
And it's interesting you bring him up. I know they met with him. I thought something was going to happen after Irvin got hurt. I thought that was a natural match as a guy that just a specialist come in passing downs and could give you something. He must have, I don't know if he was just asking for too much money or if he just doesn't really have the desire to play at this point.
Michael Kendrick's back for, you know, practice squad. So maybe that's what they're thinking. Maybe they're thinking about turning Michael Kendrick loose.
I thought the big acquisition this year, you know, the big trade deadline acquisition this year, I thought was going to be getting Darryl Taylor back. But it sounds more and more like he's just going to be a redshirt year. Make sure he's 100% healthy so you get him next year. And maybe our big addition will be Alton Robinson playing a bigger role and getting more snaps and getting in earlier in games. Or maybe our big addition will be the second coming of our big addition in the offseason and Jamal Adams coming back and giving this defense a spark after
that. Or maybe Shaquin starts getting some more looks, and maybe that's the big addition.
Or Jordan Brooks getting healthy.
Jordan Brooks getting healthy. I mean, don't sleep on the Kendrick signing. As much as people want to hammer Kendrick's the last couple of years, the one thing I will say, though, is this. He was put in a lot of bad spots by our scheme that weren't playing to his strengths. Michael Kendrick actually is a fairly effective pass rusher out of the linebacking position. Mm-hmm. So maybe now that they've flipped KJ Wright over and they're like, oh, we can leave KJ on the field with Bobby Wagner, and now we can use a guy like Kendricks to blitz. And then that lets us keep Jamal Adams at home to help with the balls over the top. Dunbar comes back. He's a better cover guy than Trey Flowers. So maybe that's an option they're looking at. I don't know. I'm just, you know, I'm throwing it out there that it's a possibility.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Seahawks and Cardinals get together this Sunday at 1:05 Pacific time. You going to the game?
I am not one of the lucky 1,200 that got the lottery, so no.
Oh, they did it by a lottery. I wondered how they were going to do that. I thought the 1,200 number was so strange. Some states have allowed like 20%, but 1,200.
They did 1,200.
That place holds like 70, right?
Season ticket holders.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's a 68,000 person stadium.
So it's going to sound it's going to sound like this on Sunday.
Pretty much.
Right.
That's spot on.
I wonder, do you think there's any chance that any of those 1,200 people sold their tickets to Seahawks fans?
So they have a massive debate going on talk radio down here. I'm so glad you brought this up. Massive debate, because you have these sports talk guys like, I say right now, if any of those people, you know, because every team has them. Mm-hmm. You have people who buy season tickets as an investment. They sell off, you know, 6 or 7 of the games every year because they're only going to one, maybe two, right?
Right.
They said if they see any Seahawks fans, because it's only 1,200 people, so you know who sold their seat this time.
Right.
You then
you can't hide.
You have to revoke their season ticket holder status. So
because that's been...
I don't expect to see a lot.
That might be, of all the road venues that the Seahawks have played over the last few years, and they travel so well, that might be the place that year in and year out, sometimes it feels like it's 25-30% Seahawks fans down there.
We own Cardinal Stadium.
That'll
be
funny.
An interesting stat from last year's game down here. They do a Seahawks pre-party on Saturday at Westgate, which is the shopping center adjacent to the stadium. And it was a Seahawks-Cardinals takeover party, so all the bars separate out which team, whatever. Yeah. But anyway, long story short, 130-something thousand people were there, and they estimate about 90,000-plus were Seahawks fans.
So if you're a Seahawks fan and you got one of those 1,200 tickets, buy yourself a Falcons T-shirt, or not a Falcons T-shirt, a Cardinals T-shirt, and wear it to the game. Go incognito. Don't get anyone in trouble and just enjoy the game, wear your mask, and cheer quietly.
Cheer quiet. Very, very quiet. Keep it quiet.
Nothing more than 70 decibels.
It's not the Quest Field. You got to keep it down.
That's right. All right, buddy. It was good catching up with you. Congratulations on the new phone, and we'll get together again soon to talk.
Sounds good. I'm sure we'll be texting on Sunday.
We got to turn back around and do another Cardinals game in like 3 weeks. So,
absolutely.
So we'll do something then. So, Eric Briggs, everybody, thank you. Appreciate you coming on with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, bud.
All right, man. So there you go. Bonus episode today, both streaming and on the audio-only version. Episode 101 with Eric Briggs finally getting together with us. So thanks for watching. Saw some of you tuning in We will continue to do these live streams over the next few weeks as we ramp up towards the launch of the Emerald City Sportscast on the 365 Sportscast Network in January. Next week, I'll be back with, obviously, we'll wrap up the Seahawks and Cardinals, look at how the NFC West race shapes up, depending on the result of that game. But also, it's possible that the World Series may be wrapped up by then, and then we can start to really take a deep dive and look at some potential free agents. I looked at some of the bullpen guys. We can talk about some starting pitchers and perhaps some position players as well for the Mariners. As remember, as soon as the World Series ends, we go right into the offseason, right? So we'll talk some baseball next week, and we'll really start to ramp up Pac-12 talk as we get closer to the Cougs starting their season next week. Pac-12 football is a reality. It is upon us, and we'll talk some Cougar football, do a little preview there, maybe even bring Eric right back again and talk about our beloved Cougs. So thank you for joining me once again here on the Dan Cave Podcast. I am Dan Viennes. Okay, let me change this over here. See, like it says right there on the screen, I am Dan Viennes. I am your host. This is the Dan Cave Podcast here every week on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, whatever service you use to listen to podcasts on. Please hit like, hit subscribe, leave us a review. That would be fantastic. Follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. Follow the 365 Sportscast Network. Email the show at thedancaveshow@gmail.com. Reach out to me however you can. Let us know how we're doing, and send me your questions, your comments, and we'll get them on the air. Until next week, as always, go Seahawks, go Mariners, and go Cougs.